Hey, what's up? This is Radio Free Nintendo episode 110, and we have a big group of people here. We got five people on the show this week. Returning our guest from last week to finish up what he started is Nick DiMola.
Howdy.
Welcome back, Nick.
Thanks.
We also have our wonderful editor of the podcast and features, James Jones.
And features, yes. Let's not forget that.
How's them features editing going?
What?
LOL features.
Yeah. You should be the LOL editor now that Ty is not on the staff anymore.
Oh, boy.
It's the editor of LOLs. Of LOLs, L-U-L-Z.
We're going to have to find someone sufficiently incapable to replace him.
you're well on the way. Of course, Greg.
Hello there.
Checking in from the UK.
I am indeed, as ever.
Always great to have Greg.
Thank
Fan
you.
Favorite. Greg Lay.
Mm-hmm.
I am your host, Jonathan Metz, and returning to the show after a 1 week hiatus is John Linden.
A 1 week protest.
What?
No, we should be clear about this. We did offer John $25 million over 10 years not to come on the show.
No way. I can't be bought.
Yeah, so now we're gonna have open competition between him and Nick. And may the best man win. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay, you're the Hall of Famer in that one, buddy. I'm not winning shit. I can tell you that. I'm getting voted off, man.
John's protest, not Gandhi-esque.
Just before we started recording today, I saw a new blog post by John Lindemann talking about all the upcoming games for Wii and DS that he is interested in.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. Woo. And, so now that you've proven that you are actually looking forward to games on Nintendo platforms, can you prove that you are actually playing games on Nintendo platforms?
As a matter of fact, I can, Johnny. Actually, I'm looking right now at a certain Nintendo DS sitting on my floor with a certain option pack inserted into it.
Oh,
within that DS is a certain game called Space Invaders Extreme that I've heard that James has been talking smack about.
It's my
the
job.
Hunger strike is over.
Yeah.
It's my job.
Yes. James' job is to perceive and judge games before he's ever played them. We've had one screenshot with Prince of Persia.
No, you judge that screenshot too. That screenshot was ass. And the people who released that screenshot deserve to be fired.
Hey, John, what do you think of the game?
I think it's really, really good. Especially with the paddle controller, it's Yeah, the paddle controller is really, really makes it worthwhile. It's a lot more colorful than I thought it would be. But I think, I mean, everything that you've kind of heard about it is pretty much spot on, like the music. And I haven't gotten into the multiplayer yet. I have yet to put my friend code up. I know that a couple of people on here have it. But I'm going to do that soon, and hopefully I'm going to, you know, get on it. Because, Greg, you have it, right?
Yeah, I got it. I got it last week. Yeah, I've been playing quite a bit.
Have you
he got
it
online? Before you in Europe.
Yeah, I know. The story behind that, the whole Amazon.com debacle, for some reason, I actually ordered it on July the 4th, and I lasted until about July 29th, and I actually emailed Amazon and complained. I'm like, where is this game? And so they gave me a non-answer. So I actually wound up, you know, going out to Best Buy and picking it up. So very seldom
well, so
do I
did
do
they
that.
Ever Did they ever charge you? I mean...
Oh, no. I canceled my order.
Did you just cancel the order?
Yeah. So my order sat there for 3 weeks for no reason whatsoever. I could have just
went out
and bought
it. They didn't even apologize? I thought you were going to say they were like, oh, our bad, here's your game, and we'll give you a gift certificate.
Nope.
To say, to apologize for your wait.
No, that's what I thought they'd do, but they just basically said, yep, we really have no control over that. You know, it just all depends on what's in stock around you. And I was just like, okay, just cancel the order. So I was like, whatever, man. So,
that's really strange. I mean, what's the point of having an online store if it's all about like what's in stock around you?
Yeah. Yeah, because Greg, you ordered that from Amazon UK, right?
No, actually, it was from a pretty similar website, but I mean, I normally don't have any problems with that sort of thing, but I guess every now and again some bizarre quirk that happens.
Yep, but I mean, it's it was in stock at Best Buy, it was at Target, and I'm sitting here meanwhile waiting to get it from Amazon. It was just retarded. But got it, and I must say I am very pleased, and that's That's pretty much my new business. I mean, I've played some other stuff. Geometry Wars, of course. Johnny got me to get that. Geometry Wars 2.
I've been making the rounds on Instant Messenger. convincing everyone like, I know to buy it.
The funny thing with that, too...
He's like, day one, hey, Greg, I've got Geometry Wars 2. It's really good. Day two, hey, Greg, Geometry Wars 2 is still good. Day three, I've still got it, and you still don't have it.
Well, the funny thing with that is I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm all psyched. I'm like, I'm going to go online. I'm going to, you know, get online. I'm going to, you know, check Johnny's scores. I'm going to fucking kill him. Johnny's scores, you don't understand. Like, my scores, I'm scoring, like, you know, 200 grand, 300 grand. Johnny's scores are, like, 50 million. And I get on there, like, in every single friggin' mode, I'm like, okay, whatever. Okay, Johnny. Like, the thing is, I feel kind of duped because I think Johnny just, like, pretty much brought me online with that game just to show me how much I suck, basically.
No, I want you to get better. I want you to get good at it.
Sure, Johnny.
Show me around.
So, in other words,
money.
He's not going to let you stop playing it until you score at least 40 million
That's
points.
That's right. I'm going to nag you until... And I can watch your progress. I can watch your...
I know you can.
Compared to the messages that Greg got, mine were a little bit more like, dude, you got to get this damn game. Holy crap.
Well, you've got
because you already have a 360, James, so...
Yeah.
With Greg, I was kind of, I went in, you know, we were discussing some of the differences between Galaxies, because he has Galaxies and he likes that a lot,
great.
So
it's great, yeah.
that's the nature of that conversation. With you, I was giving the sales pitch, because I know you have access to it.
Yeah, of course, me, I'm like the easiest sale on the planet.
I like to use real money to buy games.
Oh,
well, you could go to the store and use your real money to buy a points card, I guess.
I hate that system. I really hate the point system.
I do too, but, you know, it's
neither the Nintendo nor the 360 system are quite as bad as the system the PS3 launched with, where you had to get money, put it into your virtual pocketbook, and then spend that money.
But, I mean, if you have a credit card, that takes about 2 seconds, James.
Yeah, if you had a credit card...
Then that's a problem.
You might want to think about that. Yeah. You are American, right?
Come on, man.
Maybe.
Eat your credit crunch. Yeah. Come on, buddy.
So my favorite quote about Geometry Wars this week, Carl, I was talking to Carl about it because I convinced him to buy it too. And he said that he was hanging out with his brother, and his brother was on the Xbox, and he was looking at, I don't know, leaderboards and stuff like that. He was looking at some of Carl's friends on the game. And he said to Carl, this guy Johnny has like a really low gamer score, but he's fucking amazing at Geometry Wars.
Exactly.
And Carl was like, yeah, he had Galaxies.
Okay, that explains it partially. Also the fact
I've been practicing for 6 months for this game.
So the thing is, like, see, what I didn't expect, like, your skills do translate directly over then. Like, you're using the same kind of techniques.
Yeah, it's basically a sequel.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a
sequel. It's a two.
Yeah, but Galaxy sort of exists outside of the two live arcade Geometry Wars games. But I would say Geometry Wars 2, I mean, it's much more narrow in terms of the amount of levels and the amount of modes and the things you can do. It's missing all the kind of RPG aspects of, like, it doesn't have the drones, and it doesn't have the drone upgrading, which it kind of gives you this motivation to keep playing for a long period of time, and it doesn't have very many things to unlock. But the gameplay itself is just as deep, and the differences between the modes in Geometry Wars 2 are much greater than the differences between levels and Galaxies.
Okay.
So even though Galaxies has, I don't know, 40 levels, a lot of them are pretty much variations on a theme.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I've played them all, and I like all of them pretty much, but there are really only about 6 or 7 kinds of stages in Galaxies, and then there's several versions of each one of those types. Whereas Geometry Wars 2 is much more simmered down into the essence of all that. So it's not as big of a game, but it's just as deep, and it's only $10.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it has some nice advancements. I mean, Galaxies came out 9 months ago, I guess, roughly.
It's
so this is definitely a step beyond that in terms of the core gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no, I mean, I'm really impressed with it. I mean, I do have the first one, but I played it just a bit. I didn't never really got into it because, you know, like a lot of my friends, they're more like, you know, at least the guys I know that have 360s, they play Halo and stuff like that. They don't really play stuff like Geometry Wars. So actually, I'm glad, Johnny, that you're so into Geometry Wars too. It's pretty cool.
Oh,
hug. Group hug.
Skype hug. Okay, well, Greg, take us back into Nintendo Land.
Yeah, well, I've still been playing... Temporarily. I've been getting more absorbed into Space Invaders, got a bit further. I think there's about 3 stages on the branching path that I haven't done yet. On the harder end of the sort of branching path of the one-player mode and stuff, but
you're better than I am.
I'm not very good at it, though. I don't feel like I am. I'm struggling a bit. But I really like, you know, over time, more of the sort of design of the patterns, like, kind of reveals itself to you in terms of, like, you know, the ways of, like, if you can pick off these 4 enemies, you get this power, it makes it a lot easier to blow up the rest of the formation and stuff like that. I mean, it's definitely real design in there rather than just enemies, you know, ceaseless. It's clever, and I'm enjoying it, and I think I'll continue to enjoy that, and pretty much everybody I know that's got it feels pretty similarly. But I got something else in last week. Very special thing, though, from the wonderful people at Oxygen Games that brought us, or should I say, brought me, Hurry Up Hedgehog.
They went right back at it.
Yeah, well, yeah, apparently they had no issues with my review. I think this is a vindication of the thoroughly fair treatment I gave that game, as they sent over a preview build of the DS game, A Pirate's Duel on the High Seas, which is, I guess, must be pretty similar, from everything I've read, pretty similar to the WiiWare game that launched not so long ago, which had a different subtitle. It's not very interesting at all, really. I've played through quite a bit of it, and it's kind of pretty basic gameplay. It shares some things in common with Hurry Up Hedgehog in terms of the sparse sound design and the kind of lifeless art of it, but in terms of the gameplay, obviously, it's more of a sort of actual game than that was.
They're getting better.
You control a little pirate ship and you sail around using the shoulder buttons to sort of go forward or back, and you control orientation with the D-pad, and then you've got sort of a primary cannon with A and sub weapon on B. And it's pretty much the same thing over and over again, really. You sail around, maybe sometimes there's a gate shut, so you have to shoot some other ships, you know, get a little broadsiding war with them for a while. And most of them don't really seem that smart or do that much damage, so you can just pretty much stand there and shoot them, and they're dead. If there's one thing it reminded me of, and this is kind of really damning, is Subspace Emissary. In the sense that a lot of the time it's easier to just go past the enemies, but every now and again,
it makes it faster.
But every now and again, you do have a locked door, which means you have to, you know, go around for a while, killing all of them, and they're always the same. You know, maybe slightly reskinned for a different area, but that's it. So yeah, make of that what you will for both Smash Brothers and Pirates. It's not,
you know,
great.
To be fair, you could pretty much say the same thing for the first level of Super Mario Brothers.
Maybe. I guess that's the thing you've got to...
But you've got... later in the game, there are times when you have to jump on flying Koopas to, you know, to get over a gap, and there's a lot more to it, obviously, but... And you can use the enemies. I think a sign of good platformer design is that you can use the enemies. Like, this was the thing that impressed me when I played Klonoa on PS1, and I played it after it came out, so I'd heard all this, like, critical praise for Klonoa, and everybody's like, it's pretty much the new Mario. Like, it's that good. It's a 2D platformer in this age of, you know, crappy 3D platformers, like, you know, all that junk on PS1. There was a ton of really bad stuff. So I remember getting it and being kind of excited, and at first I was like, this is kind of slow-paced and kind of like Kirby-esque, like not that exciting to me. But then I started to realize some of the amazing level designs, because you had to use enemies. I don't even remember exactly how you use them in that game, but you have to use them as part of the mechanics of getting around and getting up to higher places. And when it does that, it makes you think of enemies not just as something to be killed, but something to use. And it's like, like you said, in Space Invaders, instead of just there being this mass of stuff and you have to kill it all, it makes you think about how you want to kill these enemies. Maybe you want to leave these alive for a little bit so that you can set up a certain pattern or a certain sequence of shooting them off, and you end up working that into your gameplay. And it's such a seemingly easy thing to add to a game design, and yet not many games do it. You know, so
yeah,
many games.
I mean, certainly, it certainly helps things
for the sake of having enemies.
It certainly helps things seem less arbitrary. I mean, another good example, I suppose, is the Wario games. You know, the sort of 2 and 3, especially where you have to that's really integral to how you kind of get around the game world, is how you utilize the abilities of enemies to turn you into different stuff.
Yeah, and actually this is one of the big problems I have with the 3D Mario games, because I think they lose that element to a large extent, especially Mario 64. You have all these enemies like Goombas walking around, and they're just in your way, and even in Galaxy, usually I would avoid Goombas, because they're a pain in the ass to jump on in 3D on those spherical worlds. It's hard to line up your shadow, and you no longer have the punch, so you can't just walk up to them and kill them like you can in 64. And you can't spray them off like you can in Sunshine. So usually it's easier to just avoid them, you know? And that's not good. I think I might have mentioned that. I didn't review that game, and I know I've talked about it in the podcast before, but I think the enemy designs in the recent Mario games leave a lot to be desired, because you're no longer using them to do anything. They're just kind of in the way, except they're not even really in the way.
The only use they can have is if you actually jump on them rather than spin them, they can give you a coin. But the thing is, if you're avoiding them all the time, you may not need
a coin.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know, but they're more like a resource, you know, they're not like a tool.
Yeah.
I mean, even back to the very first Super Mario Brothers, you can jump on a turtle, a Koopa, and then pick up its shell or kick it at other enemies and use it as a weapon. So, I mean, that goes back to the very beginning of the series, and I feel like they've really lost that
in the past
2 or 3 games.
You can also do those tricks like that one-up trick with the turtles coming down the stairs, like the...
Oh yeah!
Remember that?
My life gotten that to work.
Nah, that's impossible.
That's really easy.
Really?
I mean, it seems like to be one of those things you either can do it or you can't, and no matter how many videos of it or how many people I see demonstrate it for me, I've never been able to make it work.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Nick's like, you just suck, right, Johnny. Nick's like, huh? So, wow, this is really easy for me. You must really suck.
You're just gonna walk up to the step and jump, and when the turtle shell comes under you, you land on it, and just goes back and forth. I don't know. Never had trouble with it myself.
I don't know how we got on this topic, but Greg, do you have anything, or are you just going to end on that?
No, nothing really. I've been playing this and that, but nothing new. Plenty more Geometry Wars Galaxies, because that's the closest thing I could get to vicarious experience of the second one on the XBLA, and this, that, and that, but nothing in particular.
Alrighty, well, I'm next, and I'm not going to spend much time on my Xbox stuff. That is mostly what I've been playing this week, because it's still the new toy, and I got a couple new games for it. I picked up Crackdown for $15 at GameStop.
Used. Oh, awesome.
It's probably the best $15 I've spent on games in a while. I mean, it's really spectacular. And John, you were saying that you own it and you've never even played it, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I actually...
Oh, that's sacrilege.
Yeah, so that's like up there in John's Hall of Fame with Gradius 5.
John, everyone
right?
who bought that game for the Halo 3 demo is an idiot.
Well, I was just curious. I bought that game because I'd heard good things about it, and I just, for whatever reason, I just never popped it in. And I guess I was never really kind of interested in it, but I mean, if it's and I never really knew anybody that had it, so I didn't really have somebody in my ear like doing that Geometry Wars kind of you must play this,
which Johnny also does for this game.
Yeah, especially since you've already paid for it, I mean, you might as well try it.
Oh yeah,
you know, we could do some online co-op.
Johnny's like, dude, we could do co-op, get this game.
Yeah, well, online.
No,
I should sell drugs.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize you could do online co-op, but definitely, yeah, I'm definitely gonna pop it in.
I'm sorry, I already blew my 360 budget for the week. Thank you.
Oh, I paid $10 for that game. You need to go buy that. I don't care. If you own a 360 and you don't own Crackdown, you're seriously missing out.
It's kind of shockingly good. Like, let me put it this way. Since I picked it up on Friday, I think, I haven't played Grand Theft Auto since I got it. And at first I was afraid. Like, it was definitely a game I was interested in even before I got the system, but I was kind of planning to wait for a while because... I was afraid that they were too. It was too similar to GTA, and I knew GTA would be my first game.
Yeah.
And I mean, they are both open world games, but beyond that, they're really quite different because Crackdown is really cartoonish and outlandish and way over the top. and the gameplay ends up being a lot different. It's much less about driving around in vehicles, and GTA is at its core a driving game.
Yeah, see,
you
that's
a lot.
That's part of
driving.
The reason why I don't think I picked it up is because I always figured, I kind of heard that it was like GTA, and I just really haven't been in the mood for a GTA game in a long time. And
yeah,
so I kind of
really,
just shot away
it
from it.
It looks like GTA at a glance, but once you start playing it, it really feels totally different because I actually usually avoid driving because
yep,
it's
too.
Not as much fun, and it's much more fun to jump around.
Well, yeah, that the fact that the cars, the fast cars, essentially just careen out of control at full speed.
Well, you have
right,
to level
yeah,
up your driving
of,
skills to really
yeah,
take advantage of
and
driving.
And I'm kind of like, I'm having trouble leveling up my driving skills because I don't drive often enough.
Well, not
yeah,
only that, to level up your driving skills, you have to run over enemies with your car that you can't control.
Yeah, but
yeah,
there are driving challenges, hard. Too, that you can do.
But you still can't control the car.
Well,
there are different
some
ways,
easy challenges to do. I don't know.
There are different ways to do it, but it's definitely my least favorite part of the game. The shooting is actually really fun, but the best part is jumping around on rooftops.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, everybody says this is the best part of the game, and within, like, I downloaded the demo, and the demo made me go out and buy it the same day, because even in the demo, you can tell that, like, jumping around in this game is awesome. It's basically a platforming game, a 3D platforming game. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me at first of Spider-Man 2 on GameCube. And then beyond that, it really reminds me of Hulk Ultimate Destruction, also a last-gen. It was a multi-platform game. But it actually feels more like the Hulk because of the weight of the character and the fact that you're jumping and not web-swinging and you can't stick to walls. But it's amazing, honestly, the experience of running around on the roofs and trying to find secret items and stuff like that. I really can't put it down. I mean,
the demo came out before the game, so I'm going to ask you if they solved the one real problem I had with the demo. Does the camera still kind of like fly around to weird positions on you?
I didn't have any problems with the camera.
Oh.
No, I haven't had any trouble.
Because I felt like the demo, a lot of times the camera ended up looking at you, not the people you're shooting.
No, that doesn't really happen.
Once you target somebody, it kind of shifts the camera behind you and focuses your line of sight on the enemies.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's enough about Crackdown. I have a feeling James is going to pick it up soon, and then he may talk about it some more. As we already mentioned, I picked up Geometry Wars 2. I won't talk about that anymore, but it's amazing for $10. Amazing. And also, just today, I picked up Burnout Paradise.
Great game, dude.
I
love that game.
I was really interested in it before I got the system, like I said. And I had been planning to make it one of the first ones I got. And then I read on a post on Gaff today, somebody was saying that EA dropped the prices on a bunch of their games at Best Buy, including this one. So it's now $30 new at Best Buy. So I drove 20 miles out to Best Buy this afternoon and picked it up. And I've only played it for like half an hour so far.
Well,
but it's really cool.
It's a perfect day to get it, too, because they just released the Cagney update, which adds a whole bunch of online modes. That has been for the 360. I mean, they just released it for PS3 a couple of weeks ago. But everybody on the 360 has been waiting for it.
Yeah, well, I actually already downloaded that update, but I haven't applied it yet, or I haven't tried it yet, so I don't know what it does. Yeah. But so far I really like it. It is absolutely gorgeous, that's for sure. It's easily the prettiest of the three games I have for the Xbox so far. GTA is impressive in terms of scope, I guess, but it doesn't have, like, really, truly amazing graphics or anything. It's nothing that's going to blow you away, but I think Burnout looks pretty astonishingly good.
Yep.
So that's my 360 stuff. I have been playing a hell of a lot of Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah, how was that, Johnny?
In fact, I watched several DVDs this week and just was playing the game while I watched the movie, and by the end of the movie I wasn't exactly sure what had happened because I was paying more attention to the game. Final Fantasy IV is amazing. I already love the original game, and so I haven't played it in, I don't know, 5 or 6 years on the Super Nintendo, but it's the DS version is pretty astonishing. I mean, it's very beautiful. The gameplay tweaks, most of them are pretty subtle, but they make the game a lot easier to play. They don't reduce the difficulty level of the game. They just make it more convenient, more streamlined, easier to understand what's going on. And just to give you some ideas, I mean, in the original, you have this character, Rosa, who typically uses a bow and arrow in battle. And one of the annoying things about her was the arrows are consumable. So if you buy 50 arrows, once those run out, you'll have to go buy some more, or she won't have a weapon. And in this one, you only need one arrow, basically, of whatever type, and she can shoot it infinitely. So it just makes it easier. You just don't have to deal with that anymore. They also have stuff like some of the characters, like Cecil, the main character, he learns to use white magic, which is really handy for, like, you know, curing people between battles and stuff. In this one, he's still a slow magic learner. He's not a wizard or anything. But over time, he eventually learns more spells than he could in the original version. So eventually, he does get some, like, useful spells like life. You can bring people back to life. And he's not going to be able to use them as much because he doesn't have as much magic points. But if you need it, it's there. So there's a lot of stuff like that. And it's just, like, more than I could ever list off. I'm noticing it because I'm, like, a really pretty major fan of this game, and I've played it multiple times in the original version, so, like, all these differences are really striking to me. Like, oh my god, Kane, they made Kane right-handed? That's weird to me, you know? But it makes sense because that was kind of a source of confusion in the original. A lot of people thought they couldn't figure out why they couldn't equip weapons on him. It's because he's left-handed. You have to put his spear in his left hand and a shield in his right, and he's the only character in the game who's left-handed. So it's confusing, and so they just took that out. So there's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, I think it's definitely the best version of this that I've ever played. And I'm probably for reviews. I mean, I've played it for 30 hours already, so I'm definitely formulating these kinds of thoughts in my head. But I'm probably in the range of a 10 for this.
Nice.
So for guys like you, Greg,
yep,
who've never played a Final Fantasy game, and also TYP, I need to talk to him about this. Actually, he's planning to get it, I think, for his trip to Japan.
I think he's broken already. Actually,
he's already
done it. Yeah,
that's not even going to cover half the flight.
No, it'll last him the flight, and probably a couple months after he gets there. But I think it's amazing. It's a very accessible game to start playing Final Fantasy, and it's very pretty. You know, it's the most updated looking one of these older games. It is difficult. The boss battles in particular are quite difficult. Other than the bosses, I think it's really not much different than the American version of FF4, which was considered the easy version. So, like, I think 90% of the game really is not that difficult. It's not that much different than I remember. But the boss battles are pretty nasty. And I know this game inside and out, and I've had to go to GameFAQs just to remind me of some of the strategies on these guys, because it's been so long and they're so specific on some of these that if you don't do pretty much a pretty specific plan going into it, then you're probably not going to win the battle. So they're tough, but other than the bosses, it's pretty accessible.
You make a pretty compelling case there, Johnny, but I mean, I personally actually passed on Final Fantasy 3 in anticipation that this would get remade, which of course it did, and exactly, and this is the what you know, certainly this and 6 are like the ones of the pre-7 era.
Yeah, well, this one is such an advancement beyond 3, and even the original versions of them, because 4, this was really one of the first Japanese RPGs to have fully developed stories, fully developed characters. I mean, when you start the game, your main character is this dark knight in an evil army who's plotting to overthrow his king because he's making him do things that are terrible, and he already has a girlfriend who's worried sick about him and is worried for his soul. And then he gets led, this is like the first thing in the game, he goes and kills a bunch of wizards and steals their crystal from them, and then feels bad about it afterwards and considers quitting his job. Then he gets sent on this wild goose chase to unwittingly kill an entire village of people. And eventually, like a fourth of the way through the game, he completely changes character. I mean, physical appearance, abilities, personality, totally different, and literally becomes like a new character. I mean, there's just nothing else like this, especially for the time it came out. It was pretty groundbreaking in terms of story, in terms of the way the characters move in and out of your party. it's amazing, you know. I mean, it's very linear in terms of the story. There are a lot of side quests here and there, but I mean, the story is very Japanese, very linear. But I think there's nothing else like it except for, say, Final Fantasy VI. So hopefully I've convinced you. Not a game I'm playing, but this is new business, not what you've been playing. So I want to talk briefly about Watchmen, because I saw the trailer for it in front of The Dark Knight, as a lot of you probably did. And I'd heard of it before, but I was like, this looks weird. This is not what I was expecting. So I checked my local public library, and sure enough, they have a couple copies of the graphic novel. So I put one on hold and picked it up, and I'm about halfway through it now. So The Watchmen is like, it's this pretty strange story about like this era. It's like this alternate reality 1985 when Nixon is still president, and America is like the superpower in the world because they have this man who is like a walking nuclear bomb, basically. And there was a time back in the like 40s through the 60s where it was pretty popular for people to like dress up in costumes and be basically Batman. Like, they didn't have any powers, but they were like, you know, vigilantes. And then in the late 70s, the people kind of got sick of it, and the police went on strike saying they couldn't do their jobs because of these people out there trying to do it for them. And so Congress passed a law outlawing mass vigilantes. And so now you have all these like old superheroes who are in retirement, and somebody's killing them off one by one. And it's like a mystery, and you're trying to figure out who they are. And as it goes on, you learn more about the history and how all this stuff came to be and why the world is the way it is. And it's really interesting. It's not very comic booky in the sense of like Iron Man or Spider-Man or something like that. It's a lot more serious. It's more like V for Vendetta, which was written by the same guy, Alan Moore. And I think that was the last graphic novel I read, probably. But it's very good, very interesting, very adult in the way it treats things. So if you like comics and you haven't read Watchmen, you probably have because it's really famous. But if you haven't, you might want to do like me and take a look at it before the movie comes out next year.
Yeah, I have not read that, but I remember I was actually back into comics back in like the mid-80s, and I remember that coming out. And I remember kind of looking at it, and I was like, "Nah, that looks kind of weird." It was probably way above my head at the time, but yeah. I do remember that coming out. It was very, very big.
John's
old. I'm just old, man.
It was way above my head because I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that I'm catching up with it now. I mean, like I had an uncle who used to work at a bookstore and a book distribution company. He would send me all kinds of stuff, like graphic novels and not, you know, and real novels, literature and stuff like that. But I remember he sent me V for Vendetta when I was probably 10 years old, and I glanced through it and I'm like, you know, where are the superpowers? Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it looks like a comic book, and it is basically, but it's not like a superhero comic book. And so I kind of just never read it and put it up on the shelf. And then when that movie was coming out, or maybe even after I saw the movie, I went back and I was like, I think I own a copy of this. And I pulled it off my parents' bookshelf and actually read through it again. So I never did have Watchmen, but yeah, I was a big comic book fan as a kid, but it was, you know, it was kids' comic books. It was pretty light stuff. So it's interesting to go back now and see some of the more adult things in the medium. Because I do still like comics. I don't read them anymore, but I do like to go back and read some of that stuff every now and then. So anyway, that completes my new business, and sorry for taking so long.
Actually, Johnny, yep. I've seen one other game you've been playing.
What's that?
I believe it's called Yaris.
Oh, on Yaris?
On the 360.
I downloaded it yesterday because it's free. You know, it's like a sponsored live arcade game, and you can download it for free.
That
so.
Doesn't justify it.
I wanted to try it, you know, and it's really bad, and I'm deleting it, yes. So.
Oh, say that
I played
now.
It for like,
say
I played it
now.
For like 10 minutes.
Someone
and
watches
and
Gamer Tag. Watch the Gamer Tag.
By the way, that game has 200... game points, or whatever they call it, gamer score points on it. It's the only reason I can justify having it is if you're like the supreme gamer points whore.
Make your
I don't care
bigger.
About points. I do really like achievements. I don't care about the points you get for them, but I like the achievements because I was talking to my friend TJ about this, And he agreed, they motivate you to try to do things in the game that you might not try to do otherwise, but that are really fun. Mm-hmm. Like, there's stuff in Crackdown for climbing up to the top of the highest building in the whole game and then jumping off into the water below. It's like, there's not that much point to it on its own, but because there's an achievement there and the game kind of acknowledges that you did it, it's actually kind of fun to go see if you can actually pull it off. And in the process of doing that, you find out, actually, this is challenging and interesting, and I'm glad the game kind of pushed me in that direction to go try this because it's fun.
That's like in GTA 4 where they have an achievement for, like, falling to your death from a certain height, I think.
It's pretty, yeah, it's really, so it, like, makes you go out and try to find the tallest place and actually get up there. Yeah, so, I mean, as my friend TJ put it, I thought this was really clever. He said, it gives you motivations for doing things in the game other than just getting to the end. Mm-hmm. Because that's the traditional goal of any game, is basically get to the end of it. And what achievements do is basically say, we want to acknowledge you doing other things in the game. And sometimes they're making progress towards getting to the end of the game. And sometimes they're totally unrelated. They're just wacky things that you can try to do. And like I said, especially in one of these open world type games like Crackdown or GTA, they lead you and they give you ideas of fun things to do that you might not have ever seen before just because the game is so wide open and impossible to explore completely.
It feels games like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark almost pioneered that back on the N64. I mean, personally, I was a big GoldenEye and Perfect Dark guy, and I beat all of the cheats that you can unlock, which were like getting ridiculously crazy times on the mission modes in the game, and the whole idea of achievements kind of brought that back for me. It's like this layer of gameplay that you didn't really have before. You know, obviously it's getting to the end of the mission, that was the big deal, but when you start incorporating the idea of doing extra goals, it pushes you to get the value out of that game, and this is such an easy way to do that. I wish other systems did it, and I guess Sony's hopping on board with the whole trophy idea, so that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would love for Nintendo to try to pull off something like this. It's probably not going to happen until their next system, but I think achievements get a bad rap because of people who get obsessed with the gamer score, which is truly silly. But the achievements themselves,
Avatar,
aside from
the
numbers,
Airbender,
are really cool. Yeah. I would never ever play that game.
I mean, honestly,
I did play that game on GameCube for a preview, and it was pretty bad. Steven thinks those are good games, and he's wrong.
I think people could make a game and just put on the cover in giant letters the easiest 2,000 achievement points you'll ever get.
Just call it an achievement.
Well, the thing is, the word will get out anyway, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, if you just blatantly said, like, all you had to do is, like, press A 50 times for 100 points.
And put it on, like, Xbox Live Arcade and just call it, you know, achievement whore.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the achievements in Geometry Wars, some of them are really interesting and very, very, very challenging. I have all but two now. And a couple of them I, like, worked on for an hour at a time.
But they aren't too crazy, though. That's what I like about them. Like, they seem
no,
achievable.
No, they're not totally unreasonable. Yeah, they are achievable, but they're difficult. Uh-huh. And they make you work towards it. And actually, in trying to get those, I got better at the game, and I learned things about the game that I didn't know otherwise.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I really like the idea. But thanks for the Yaris comment. Okay.
You're welcome.
James,
thanks,
Carl,
it's for
your
that.
Turn, James. It's your turn.
Well, I pretty much finished up what I'm going to do with Guitar Hero on tour. I'm going to say right now that easy and regular, or whatever they call it, normal, are way, way too easy. And then like hard, it suddenly just decides, yeah, we're going to actually make a challenging game now. And it like doubles the difficulty. So I kind of wish that normal hadn't been basically easy with just the blue button involved, but give me better practice. But I got through hard, and I basically said, that's enough. You know, this has done more damage to my hand in a week than 8 years of semi-professional concert violist did, so I'm pretty much settled with that game. I've made my peace with it. If you enjoy the Guitar Hero franchise and you own a DS Lite and you honestly can't wait to get your hands on Guitar Hero Metallica Edition, go for it. You'll love it.
Because the overlap in terms of the set list is pretty much right there, right? You know, I mean, to me,
oh, yeah.
to me,
the overlap.
Yeah, no doubt, and most of Master of Puppets is pretty much the same thing. I really can't.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jet and pretty much anything on the set list for, say, S&M
is Jet song
the same.
Is great.
It's a good song, but it is not Metallica music, no. But my point was, like, if you're such an addict, you'll buy those stupid single band games.
World Tour is first, and that should be more substantial.
You're right. Yeah. World Tour is first, but if you're such a fan, you can't wait to get both of them. If you're such a fan, you buy the new full version of the game because you want to upgrade your guitar.
How about this? If you bought Guitar Hero Aerosmith, God help your soul, maybe you would like On Tour.
Nobody bought that game, dude. I can't bring myself to believe.
No, actually,
bought that game.
The sales were pretty bad for Aerosmith. At
good.
Least the first month sales. Yeah, they were pretty
good.
Bad. Yeah, I'm happy about that. Yeah. Hopefully, they'll get the message. I mean, Metallica makes more sense for a Guitar Hero game,
but you know,
it's still a bad concept.
See,
it's still not a good idea.
Like,
there's
a lot of
three bands in the world you could make a whole game about that one band, and even Metallica doesn't make that mark, in my opinion.
See, a lot of the music on here, not good for guitar music, so I really don't understand the set list on tour.
Yeah,
There's at least 7 or 8 songs that had no business being in a guitar game, and then there are like 4 or 5 more songs that had no business being in a rock game.
Right.
And then when you put those together, you're almost at half the set list.
Yeah.
So...
And then another third of the set list is reused from Guitar Hero 3.
Yeah, and a lot of it just sucks. Like, why is Stray Cats on here? Seriously.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Their song makes no damn sense. Now, if you're not aware, how would you describe them? Like big band revival?
I thought it reminded me of, like, Brian Setzer's orchestra.
Yeah, well, he's in Stray Cats.
There you go.
Or Big Bad Voodoo Daddies and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, he's in Stray Cats?
That was his band before
there you go.
Brian Setzer orchestra, all that junk.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes no damn sense why this is in a guitar game.
Well, Brian Setzer is a badass guitar player.
But there was no badass guitar in this song.
No, it's not.
There was more slap bass in this
song. It's not like every song in a Guitar Hero game has to be just wall-to-wall guitar solos.
But there has to be some.
When you think of that song, you should think of the guitar part.
Yeah.
You know, or you should say, oh yeah, that song has good guitar parts. And like... so many songs, especially in On Tour, I looked at them, and even after playing them in the game, and I still thought, the guitar part is not interesting in this. I mean, it doesn't have to be just a giant wanky solo, but it has to keep your interest, you know?
There were a couple songs that surprised me with their guitar part. I think the Rick Springfield song, I don't remember which one it was, might have been
one.
Yeah,
that one's more interesting than you would expect.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand in Rock Band, like... we did Tangled Up in Blue on Rock Band 2 at E3, and Steven played the guitar for that song, and he said it was really boring. And I wouldn't argue with him. It's not a guitar-heavy song, you know. It's a vocal song. The vocals were like, I don't know, like 5 dots or whatever, you know, on the relative degrees of difficulty when it shows you the song. But that's a full band game, and you have to expect the bass part is not going to be exciting in every song in the game. There will be some songs that are good for bass, some songs that are good for drums, etc. But in Guitar Hero On Tour, where you only play the guitar, there's no excuse for some songs to not have interesting guitar parts.
Yeah. And
that's
and
all
the
there
fact
is
of the matter
the
is, there's about 13 total that don't have interesting guitar parts
right,
out of 25.
Out of 25.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. So it does feel like most of the game you're just suffering through the music. But then at the end, like the last set of songs, the game really feels like it's justifying its existence. But it doesn't.
I think it was the next to last set, the one that had
all
the
like 70s, yeah, you're right. The one on the parade.
70 songs. Yeah.
The parade justifies its existence, and but you're like, this is too late. You took too long to do it. I think next time might be better. It might not. We'll see. But I mean, I give them credit for trying. And you know, putting effort into it.
It's a bizarre, ballsy experiment, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, they did a good job with what they had, I think is the best way of putting it. But it still raises the question of, should they ever have tried it?
Yeah.
But besides that, I've been crushing my hand with more Ace Combat, which is still not showing up on my gamer's card, which is starting to worry me.
What?
It's not there, dude. Do you see
it?
Yeah, it's not showing up. But, I mean,
know.
It shows
Maybe
up on my
you
machine.
Should make sure you... sign into your account when you
maybe
start playing.
Maybe. I don't know. It's weird. But and my saves are all there and stuff, so I don't know. Whatever. But I was I've played that through. Like I said, I would never buy this game at $60 after I rented it. And I think I might have said that in the talk back for last week. I then proceeded to buy this game at $58.
Oh, well, at least it was still factually accurate, technically.
with $20 in store credit. So, which
that's not too bad.
Yeah, surprisingly, I got $10 for that Disney game.
Wow.
That's $10 that GameStop will never make back.
I don't know.
And I gave it a decent score, but that game, no. No. I ripped them off when they had sold them that game. I don't know, dude. It's still there. The actual copy I sold is still there.
Oh, well.
James I know is considering buying it back.
No. What's amazing is my copy of Miami Nights sold within like a week.
Oh.
And the best part is like 2 weeks later, there was another copy of it there. I'm pretty much convinced that was the same copy. And
when
they
people
returned...
see things in those like $10 used games bins at GameStop, they will buy some really strange shit. Because it's like $10 is like nothing, you know. I mean, it's just you don't even miss it when it's gone. So people will buy stuff they don't know anything about.
It was the Miami Knights was right at eye level on the rack. I'm like, are they serious?
It's not scaring people.
That's
away.
Why it sold.
it was sandwiched between Mario 3-on-3 hoops. And Final Fantasy, what was it, 3?
Wow.
You're trying to imply it was a Square Enix game.
Surprised they didn't sell it for 40.
I saw it and I went, and just kept walking. But what I've realized is even though I beat the main game on a rental, and not even in the full rental, like a couple days into it I had it beat, is that there is so much awesome stuff to unlock in that game. Just all the different, you know, planes you can unlock, and it makes playing these levels worth it again. And you can try different
worth
things.
$58.
$58. Well, if you like this kind of game, maybe I still think you shouldn't pay more than $50 for it, because technically I didn't. You know, I used $20 in store credit.
That's still opportunity cost, James. You could have used it on
opportunity.
Else at the store.
Yes, I could have used it to
buy.
You're
fudging it, James. You're fudging
I could have used it to buy one of the 70 copies of Sneak King they had there.
I can't believe they even accepted
that. You can get Sneak King for $2.
I'm sure you can get it for $2 at GameStop, but I was in there.
I kind of want to.
It's not bad. It's seriously not terrible. It's not terrible. I mean, there's definitely worse games that I've handed
out for reviews. It should have been.
It's worth $2.
Oh, yeah.
It should have been an arcade game. It should have been an Xbox Live arcade game.
Yeah,
I have a copy of Irritating Stick for PlayStation 1 that I bought for $1. It was at a video rental store. They were having a clearance sale. I bought it for $1.
But,
and do you guys know this game?
Yeah.
It's where there's it's like this 2D grid that you're looking at. It's kind of like Kuru Kuru Kururin, except
it sucks.
It's on PlayStation, so the controller can rumble. So the idea is that you like see this disembodied hand and it's holding this stick. I think it's based on a game show in Japan from years ago.
That game is so fucking Japanese.
It is really Japanese. It's really funny. I can't believe it even came out in America. But you move it through this like maze and the walls are electrified. So if the stick touches the wall, you get shocked. I mean, it just sounds like a Japanese game show, doesn't it?
Yes.
But in video game form, it makes the controller rumble. But it actually, like, the first time it happens, I kind of jumped a little bit. It's like the highest setting of rumble on the controller. But it's a stupid game, but I mean, it's worth a dollar. I played it for half
very
an
few
hour
games
one day,
aren't
so.
Worth a dollar.
Yeah.
And Miami Nights is one of them. But and Pokemon Mystery Dungeon's on that list. Basically, every DS game I've ever been sent to review is on that list.
Don't worry, man. We'll continue.
I thought you did Speed Racer, James. You like that.
Oh, that's right. That's actually worth more than the combined value of every other DS game I've reviewed. And it only lasts an hour.
Oh, dear. Okay,
but,
are you done, James?
Well... You had mentioned the Crackdown demo, and I'm going to say that anybody who buys a 360 in the near future, just go on there and pull down basically whatever demo even catches your eye remotely, because just doing that, it really does make me wish we had a demo system on the Wii, because, you know, I pulled down, like, I don't know, 15 demos in the last 2 weeks of just, you know, full-featured games, like, what was it today?
Did you play Too Human?
I did play Too Human, and the only thing
I like it, actually.
I think, like, that game feels like the camera's more interested in showing me, look at this cool art feature we did.
Yeah, the camera
versus
like,
hey, look,
much.
Here's the guy trying to kill your ass.
I thought the story was pretty interesting. Some of the dialogue is kind of painful,
cheesy,
but yeah, the story itself and the setup and the world they've created could be really cool. And I kind of want to get it just so I can kind of experience that narrative. And the gameplay seems like it's fairly fun, and definitely has a lot of depth that you don't get out of the demo, but I mean it could be something that you get really into.
Yeah, the dialogue was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, there's some pretty bad dialogue.
and it's delivered like Marcus Fenix in Gears of War.
Nice.
Yeah.
but it's trying to be dramatic, so it's even better. It's ridiculous.
There are some choice lines in that demo.
The funny thing about the demo is it's like 20 minutes of cinematics. I mean, that demo just goes in cinematics.
About an hour long demo total.
Yeah, it is.
Which is pretty impressive. You know,
I'm trying to think of what the other. It's a Koei game. It's like a mix of. I can't
Samurai
think of it.
Samurai Warriors?
No, it's the one they set during the Hundred Years' War. Oh, I can think of it. Bladestorm.
All Koei games are the same.
This one's not, and that's why I downloaded
the box
it.
Art when I picture all those Koei games, because they all look the same.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Bladestorm's box art looks just like that, but it's not. Doesn't actually play like their Samurai Warrior games. What you do instead is that you lead. You're a mercenary, and you walk up to different squads of different types of units and say, I want, and like tell this unit to follow you, and then you issue them orders, really simple orders like charge, attack at will, and you just kind of walk behind them. And you are vulnerable to attacks, and you do kind of swing but it's not like you're like a samurai and you go run out and crush everybody in your way with like one swing of your staff. And there's the box art to prove it's just like every other Koei box art ever. But yeah, it's not very good. But you know, I'm glad I got to play it as a demo. So like, if you have a 360 and you've never done this, just go out and download a bunch of demos to random games you think might be interesting.
I think it feels kind of like renting for free.
It does. It does feel like that. Like,
some of these games, even if I rented it, I wouldn't play it any longer than that demo goes for. Because not that good. But it costs you nothing but, you know, half an hour to find that out.
Sometimes not even
like
that.
It. I mean, like I said, I downloaded the Crackdown demo, and I was like, I'm not sure what I'm going to think about this. And it blew me away how good it was. And I went and bought the game that day for $15. But
yeah.
So,
like, I think I've got a couple. Go ahead.
No, I mean, there's a lot to be said for demos. I mean, PC games have done this for years, and you know, PC game demos started out basically as so that you could test it and make sure the game would run on your system.
Yeah.
And then they started to realize that people were more likely to buy games when they had a chance to play the demo if the game was good, and it was a way to kind of market the game. And so then it became more of that, and so it became such a successful experiment that companies like Microsoft brought it over to the console space as a purely marketing ploy, and it's effective. And it also helps you screen out games that you kind of thought you might like, and then when you, like today, I played Viva Pinata demo, and a lot of people have told me this game's really interesting, very cool, one of the kind of overlooked games on 360, and I think it's beautiful. I also thought it was kind of boring and not for me, and now I know that I'm not going to buy it.
Well, you know,
it helps you screen out those kind of games that you're on the fence about.
See, that's one of the ones on the hard drive I haven't actually played yet. But
I mean, you might like it. It's a lot like Harvest Moon.
Yeah. So the thing about that game in particular was it was uniquely created to launch a franchise. And they've done it. I mean, there's a DS game coming, I believe.
Yep,
There's a party game they've made. And there's a relatively successful TV show on Fox that 4Kids produces.
They're also making a sequel for 360.
Yeah. I mean, so it's done what they wanted it to do, so more power to Rare for finally getting something right.
Exactly.
Well, I'll say this, it is gorgeous, the graphics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen it in action. It looks pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's very much Rare-styled, too, which is a nice return to form.
Okay, well, we need to move on. Nick, I know you have a 360, too, but you have some Nintendo games to talk about.
That's correct, yeah. Actually,
trying to balance it out.
I have all Nintendo games to talk about, and I guess I may as well kick it off by saying that my wife and I have been playing Banjo-Kazooie this past weekend, which is kind of on our Rare topic here, but I don't know, just we got talking about how the new one's coming out, and I talked to you a little bit, Johnny, on IM about the latest Banjo-Kazooie, and I guess they announced that they're going to be updating the original for XBLA, I guess, so...
Yeah, I don't know what kind of changes they're going to make to it, but...
Well, I know for sure they're bringing back Stop and Swap, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah. That's weird.
It is an interesting
idea.
Because
the stuff that you were supposed to be able to get with Stop and Swap, apparently they put that stuff in Banjo-Tooie and just let you get it...
Normally,
I mean, I played
yeah.
Banjo-Tooie, and you can go find some of the eggs, not all of them that were shown in the first at the end of the first one. You can
right.
go get the ice key... Yep. And I think the ice key lets you turn Kazooie into a flame-breathing dragon, which is
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yep.
But it's pretty minor stuff, so I'm not sure exactly how they're going to implement that or what the payoff is going to be.
Well,
but it's interesting.
Supposedly, they're actually integrating it with the new Banjo-Kazooie as opposed to Banjo-Tooie, so getting things... I guess they're going to build in the gameplay aspects that will allow you to... access the eggs and the key and all that stuff that you couldn't really get without cheats on the original and go unlock stuff in the third Banjo-Kazooie. So, I mean, I plan on getting the newest Banjo-Kazooie, and I guess I'll get the XBLA version too. So,
it's going to be really interesting to see the reactions from people who download the original on Live Arcade and play through it. You know, people who didn't have an N64.
Yeah.
And they kind of want to get ready, and they go play that, and they enjoy it, and then they pick up Nuts and Bolts, and they're like, why can't I do all these moves? Because they stripped out about
yeah.
3/4 of the moves that you can do in the
It's a different type of game in Nuts and
yeah.
Bolts.
It yeah. is, it is, yeah. But, I mean, the you know, when I played at E3, I was like, I can't even double jump. Like, it's really stripped down platforming, and it just feels totally different.
Huh. Well, I mean,
but,
I guess
I
mean,
honestly, I might buy Banjo-Tooie on Live Arcade if they just fix the frame rate. That would probably be enough for me because that's a beautiful game and really interesting design, and it just did not... It's like Perfect Dark. I mean, the N64 just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, anyway, so I've been playing that, and I'm probably... well, we'll see when we finish up tonight, but I might finish that up tonight. Usually play it through at least once a year. It's just one of those classic games I... really enjoy to go back to. But anyway, aside from that, more recent games, I got Final Fantasy Fables Chocobo's Dungeon for review.
Oh!
And for those
Let
who don't know...
Let the hurting begin.
Yeah, this is...
why do you have
just
this,
just passed
Nick?
A gallstone.
But why does Nick have this? We have a go-to guy.
Even the bird is feeling pain. Even the bird is feeling pain, man. The bird knows. Birds know when you're going to die in a cave because of the gas cut out. Birds know when this game is going to crush your soul because it's a steaming
Dude,
pile of crap
that
kicks you in the nuts every 4.5 minutes. He's strangling the chocobos, so the game will stop.
You're fucking farming chocobos, man. Why didn't you tell us?
Greg, tell your bird to shut up.
That's a myth.
Oh, that must be me. Sorry.
That's the first time I'm actually going to amplify the bird noise in the podcast.
But yeah, no, it's... well, I'll just give you a little anecdote for the hell of it. I was playing, it must have been Saturday morning. I had gone to a wedding Friday night and drank quite heavily. And
You'll need to.
And Saturday morning I woke up with...
keeping little bottles in the dishwasher.
ESRB content descriptor, alcohol required.
This is my chocobo dungeon.
So yeah, I woke up in the morning, I was playing the game. I was sitting there and I got to a point in the game. Yeah, I woke up with a hangover playing this game, which was already a bad idea, let me tell you.
What, just playing the game or having a hangover? Because they're both pretty bad ideas, if you ask me.
I'd say having the hangover was more enjoyable than playing the game at the moment. But so I was playing the game and I got to a point in one of the dungeons where I literally just kept losing. And there seemed to be...
Oh, so you got to the first dungeon.
No, it was actually like the fourth or fifth dungeon. Because up till then, I was like, hey, this really isn't that bad. I was kind of enjoying it. I was moving along well. There was nothing pissing me off. And then all of a sudden, I'm playing this one dungeon, and it's like the difficulty just got amplified by 100 times what I had played. And this was like a continuation of a dungeon I had already started.
Oh, I hate those.
So,
well, you know, like, it's random, Nick.
Yeah, so. Oh, yeah, it's random.
Yeah,
fuck random,
game, random
dungeons. Oh, my God. So anyway,
just, they just
how the big, dice fell, you know?
Put a big sticker on the box. It's not lazy. It's random.
Oh my God! Seriously, I'll get into that in a minute. My God, So anyway, I'm playing the game and I kept fucking dying. So after about the sixth time of getting killed, restarting my game, rewatching the unskippable cutscenes, I just took the Wii remote. I literally threw it across the room and I was just like, "F this game." I shut it off. And I stopped playing it for literally 2 days.
Oh my god!
You know, you
would
can
you
just
say
review
that,
it at
Nick,
this
would
point.
Would you say you'd rather have a buffalo take a diarrhea dump in your ear?
What?
Yes, it was very angry Nintendo nerd, I must say.
Yeah.
That game, I haven't played that game, but I've played others.
Really? This must not have come
off.
And honestly, the team that makes the Mystery Dungeon games,
Chunsoft.
Hopefully, their building is bombed by some sort of terrorists while they're all in it,
you know,
and there are
the,
no survivors.
Oh, this is actually the third game the by Chunsoft to come out this year in the Mystery Dungeon series.
And guess what?
You have Shiren the Wanderer, which Sega published on DS, that came out in like February.
Oh, and that game's ridiculous.
Well, it's technically the fourth because there's two mystery Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games.
Well, this one's actually not Chunsoft. This is like Hand or something. It's I don't know who it is. It's some.
Oh, good. They farmed out the development of their own shitty games.
That's weird, Nick, because I'm pretty sure Chunsoft made the PS1 version of Chocobo Mystery Dungeon.
Oh,
did they? No, Chunsoft made Tornico's Mystery Dungeon, which was kind of the original Mystery Dungeon game. That's based on a character from Dragon Quest IV.
Oh, okay.
They're all over the Mystery Dungeon series, like Plague.
You know, that's their brand. Mystery
Dungeon. That's why they all need to die.
I mean, my general problem with it's really, I don't mind the concept of Mystery Dungeon aside from the random dungeons. Like, the gameplay aspect.
That is the concept of Mystery Dungeon.
I disagree with that. I think that you could decouple those two things because there's the randomly generated dungeon aspect of it, and there's the aspect of how you play the game, which is essentially like this unique turn-based, almost strategy kind of game. And if you remove the element of random dungeons and you actually design well-designed dungeons while keeping in the core gameplay where you're able to move and you have this aspect of hunger and a job system and the RPG building and, you know, attacking items in a dungeon, whatever, collecting items and selling the shit, it's a decent idea. But when you start throwing in the random dungeon part, it actually makes the game where the difficulty's random when you play the game, and that's the big problem, because sometimes you'll play it, like, for instance, I got up to like the fourth dungeon, and for the most part that entire time I was on easy dungeons. I was like, you know, it was spawning the exit right next to me, so I blast through a dungeon, no problem. But then I get
to
this dungeon.
And you don't level up either.
Exactly, so you don't level up. Then you get to a dungeon where the characters are, like, significantly harder to beat, and you just get your shit wrecked every time you play the dungeon. And it's like, there was no reason to design the game like this, because if you would have went through every dungeon, you would have had progression where you're building up your characters in a uniform fashion, and it would have been fun. But no, it's not fun the way they do it.
Well, you know, the worst part about the hunger system is that because the dungeons are so random in length, and sometimes they're like 60 levels long,
right?
There's no way to know how much food to bring, and you can never bring enough because you have a fucking limited inventory.
Exactly. And
so it's like either I bring enough food or I starve to death and I have healing items. So
it sounds like there are probably three or four different things they could change in any one of them.
Yeah, they could stop making the games
fun.
Yeah,
they could stop.
There's definitely a way to make them fun. And, I mean, the other thing that winds up suffering is, like, for instance, this game has really, really beautiful music and really great art direction, though the graphics are dog shit. But the
yay! Oh, it's just like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon.
The art direction is beautiful. I mean, they really have some interesting-looking characters. The worlds are designed interestingly.
Yep.
But when you go into the random dungeons, it's random, so everything's really basic looking. Whereas
it's Mystery Dungeon.
They could have designed like a
joke.
Competent level.
You're gonna have to sedate James. See, that's,
John, doesn't this sound just like the first draft of the review I sent you?
The whole thing, what really worries me as a reviews editor is the fact that whenever somebody gets, whenever we get one of these games in, and somebody plays it, they never want to play the game again, and we only have so many people on staff.
We're gonna have to recruit people out of the forums to review these
seven
games.
More of these games, and then we will never review another one because nobody else on staff will want to review another one.
It'll just show up at Mike's office. And it'll just sit there.
We'll give it.
He'll start
Child's
building
Play.
Like a fort out of them.
Oh, don't give it a Child's Play. That's fucking evil. That is.
Dude, if you give that to Child's Play, you will go to hell.
We do give random stuff to them, though. Like, sometimes publishers will send us a review copy for each system that it comes out on. It's like, we're not going to review the 360 game of TMNT, you know, and nobody on the staff necessarily wants it, but it's a good kids game. So we'll just have Mike. Mike just keeps, like, a stash of this stuff. It builds up over the whole year, and then we send it to Penny Arcade every year, every Christmas.
If you give this to Child's Play, I will quit the site.
You heard it right here.
Child's abuse. Okay.
That's not an idle threat. If we ever give a mystery dungeon game to Child's Play, I'm gone.
File that away. Do you have anything on a positive note to send us out with?
Well, yeah. I also played Blastworks, which went on sale last week, and I got my copy of that.
$10 now,
bones,
right?
Man.
Well, actually, it went back up to $20, but...
What?
Yeah, I don't
games
know.
Games don't go back up.
Supply and demand.
That's right. Cheap-ass gamer got wind of the game, and apparently that completely shifted the demand for the game in the entire United States of America. I don't know. But, no, it's actually a pretty good game. I really like it. If I was to describe it, I'd say it's almost like Katamari Damacy plus... shooter, I'd say, is a horizontal, like Gradius plus Katamari Damacy. So you shoot guys, and when you kill them, it kind of like lobs their corpse into the air, and you kind of navigate your plane over to the item that's floating, and you can grab it, and it augments your ship. And as a result, if they had like a firing power, that's kind of shot out in the same direction that it lands on your ship. So if you play it out right, you could actually grab things on like all sides of your ship, and it's like you're this big ball of fire that's just hitting things on every possible angle. So
now Nick, I played the PC version, which was kind of like a much more simplified version of what they eventually released as Blastworks.
Okay.
I think it was called Tumeki Fighters or something.
Yep.
It's actually like an unlockable item in Blastworks. But one thing that kind of annoyed me about that game was that these all these pieces that get stuck to your ship, they also make your hit zone really gigantic. And if anything touches any of those pieces, that piece will get knocked off, and you can't count on it anymore. And it's really hard to avoid things because your ship is getting increasingly large and gangly, and you can't really navigate around obstacles anymore because it's so big. And so like it just seems like pieces were constantly attaching and then unattaching from my ship, and I couldn't really have any consistency as far as the shot pattern.
I'd say, I mean, that feature is still there. I don't know. As I played, the first time I played it, I was having that same experience where I'd grab something and then I'd wind up getting hit again. And then as I played a little bit more, I started to get a little bit better at managing the big, gigantic blob and better at the game in general. And, I found that if you strategically place the pieces that kind of fly around so that you're not always attaching them to the front of your ship, you kind of do some fancy maneuvering and get them to attach to the back of your ship, it actually winds up working fairly well. And the other bonus that you get with it, and I'm not sure if this was in the original, but as your ship gets bigger, your points, like double, triple, whatever, like your point multiplier goes up. So as your point multiplier goes up, your number of lives you have goes up. So if you're able to manage all of these pieces on the ship, essentially you'll build up a pretty sizable number of lives that you almost have to do to beat the game. So I don't know. It felt like it added a pretty interesting element of strategy to a simple, you know, just shoot 'em up. So
have you messed with the editor yet? Because that's kind of the key feature of the game.
That is definitely daunting. The first thing I did is I checked out how you download content. And that was done kind of weird. After you had asked me how it was done in the game, so that was the first thing I checked out when I booted it up. And the way it works is you register at this Blastworks Depot site, and you essentially register your Wii friend code with the site, and then you go through and you navigate their page, and you click all the things that you want to add to your queue. And I guess what that does is makes some sort of entry in a database somewhere, and then from the game in the Wii, you go in and you go to the online section, and then you click on the Blastworks Depot item. And then when you load that up, it'll go out to their database and fetch all of the downloads that you had queued up for the game. So it downloads everything, and then you could either play with those items or you can use them in the editor, which is pretty cool. So you can like download something that looks pretty compelling, and then if there's something you didn't like about it, you can go in and modify it.
And that's all free, right?
That costs nothing, and the only thing that limits you is that when you set up the editor mode, it blocks off 128 blocks on your Wii memory.
Jeez.
So yeah, that pretty much cannibalized whatever remaining memory I had on my Wii.
That's like bold-sized, isn't it? Yeah, 128.
Yeah, so what it does essentially is it fills in that 128 blocks, so when you make the original save file, that's a big empty block, and then as you download stuff, it populates that 128 megabytes.
Geeks and otaku.
Yeah. So you have to what winds up happening is you have to manage the DLC that you get from the site, which isn't bad because a lot of stuff you download is crap anyway, and some of it is like, it's you. Like, I downloaded Ridley boss item, and he doesn't do anything interesting. He's just kind of Ridley, and it's, you shoot him and he doesn't attack you. So I mean it's kind of cool, but the editor itself, which I played around with for a good hour and a half, is unbelievable. I mean, you could literally make an entire shooting game within the boundaries of, you know, this editor that they include in the game. The problem is it's kind of clunky to navigate with the Wii Remote, and you have to read tutorials. It's literally like any other, you know, really complicated editor. If you've ever used like the Half-Life engine, yeah, it's really in depth, and there's a lot that you can do with it, but there's a lot of learning you have to do before you can really do anything with it. So,
all right, John, yeah. I think you found a reviewer for this game.
There you go.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much all
but yeah.
And silence.
There's not much more you can say about it. It's decent. If you could find it for $10 still, I'd say pick it up. So.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that's the end of new business, finally, and we're going to take a break and come back and finish up the WiiWare Roundup from last week. So stick around. We'll be right back on Saturday Night Live. We are back with part two, and before we get into the WiiWare Roundup remake, whatever you want to call it.
Redux.
Thank you, Greg. You are the wordsmith. We want to quickly cover DLC Mondays. This week we have Wild West Guns for WiiWare for 1,000 points. This, as far as I can tell, is a point the remote at the screen and shoot at stuff game.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's like the duck hunt thing in Wii Play, and the crappy part of Boom Blocks, etc. So, I don't know. I do think it's interesting that it's rated T for teen due to, like, violence or something. But this was made by Game Loft. I think it's, like, their third WiiWare game. And the first two were, I want to say, ports from cell phones.
Nice.
I don't see how
that,
this one could
that
be.
That shows a high standard of gaming.
Yeah. The Nintendo seal of quality, if you will.
Well, Game Loft makes probably the best mobile games. Like, they're considered the
best
mobile game developer.
There is no reason a mobile game should ever be ported to a console, ever.
I agree.
Oh, the games were TV Show King, which was a WiiWare title. And
that's right.
Block Breaker Deluxe, which I'm not sure if that's a WiiWare disc or a WiiWare title.
That's WiiWare. That was WiiWare. It's WiiWare.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it was that breakout clone.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. At least they're WiiWare games.
They also made stuff like Asphalt Urban GT it was a DS launch title, some stuff like that.
Oh. I don't even have to know about the game. I know it was a DS launch title. That's all I needed to hear.
It was a bad launch. We also have on Virtual Console Sonic the Hedgehog for Sega Master System. So this is like the alternate version, the like 8-bit weird thing.
Yeah. Why?
And
because Sega doesn't care.
My first thought was, why the hell are they releasing this? And I read the description. It actually sounds kind of somewhat interesting because the Master System version has somewhat different level designs, different bosses, and it doesn't have the mini games. Instead, you have to find the Chaos Emeralds hidden throughout the levels.
Right.
So it's a fairly different game. It's sort of like a remake of Sonic for Genesis, but for a worse system. And I think this is the version that was eventually
it's a
remake.
Basically, this is like a precursor to Dead Rising Chop Till You Drop.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly.
It's a downgrade Amtotal. And I think this is the... And TYP could tell you for sure, but I think this is the version that was basically ported to Game Gear for the Sonic the
Hedgehog.
Yeah,
I guess it probably was.
Sure it
Game Gear
yeah, I mean, just because those two games are essentially... The systems are essentially the same.
Right. So, if you want a Sonic game for $5, or if you're a big Sonic fan and you never played this, it sounds like the kind of thing like a really big fan of Sonic games would probably find this interesting. Because it's like a historical oddity, I guess.
Or you could just pay the $6 and get the much better game.
Mm-mm.
Or is it $8?
Yeah,
it's $8.
It's only $6 in Japan.
That's such a goddamn ripoff.
Well, actually, speaking of Genesis, the other game for Virtual Console this week is Splatterhouse 2. The original was for TG-16, and I actually reviewed that for VC Mondays. Not a good game. I've heard that... I actually played Splatterhouse 2 on Genesis when I was a kid, and I didn't like it then either. I thought it would be cool because it's like bloody and violent and it looks like Friday the 13th.
You were the reason we had the congressional hearings, dude.
I was a kid, you know.
I played Splatterhouse as a kid.
Yeah. But anyway, Splatterhouse 2, I don't know. Maybe I played Splatterhouse 3 for Super Nintendo or so. I don't know how all that worked out, but
it's called Splatterhouse.
I think there was eventually one for Super Nintendo. But anyway, Splatterhouse 2, I've heard that it's very similar to the first one, in which case I would say don't download it. But the interesting thing about Virtual Console this week, and I read about this, I knew about one of these games, but I read the full story on Game Life, Chris Kohler's blog at Wired.com, and he made the note, he actually made this funny little cartoon about it, but he had this really interesting article saying that there were actually three different Virtual Console games from three different publishers that were all announced or listed to come out today, this week.
Yeah.
And none of them came out. Instead, we get Splatterhouse 2 and Sonic for Master System. But the three games were... Ease Book 1 and 2 for TurboGrafx, and that's like the famous Falcom RPG series. Ease 3 actually came out on Super Nintendo.
Now, are those actually the Turbo CD ones?
I think
weren't
so.
Were they out on Turbo CD?
I think so, yeah. I think it's a Turbo CD game. And this was highly anticipated by a lot of RPG fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't get a lot of RPGs on Virtual Console because of Square. So it's a big deal when one comes out. And this one's apparently been announced for a while, and still not coming out. I think Hudson's publishing it. You'd think Hudson wouldn't have any trouble getting something on Virtual Console, but yeah, they had this listed for August 4th, yeah, and it didn't come out. The other is Mega Man for NES from Capcom, and obviously they announced recently that they're bringing out Mega Man and Mega Man 2, at least, on Virtual Console in anticipation of Mega Man 9. That one didn't come out, and then also we got an actual full press release this one, Samurai Showdown 2 for Neo Geo, which I've heard is way better than the first Samurai Showdown.
It is.
Actually, like, one of the best Neo Geo games.
Oh, yeah, it is a fantastic game. It's one of those games I basically blew my allowance on in the arcade repeatedly. But at the same...
So, like, this was supposed to be, like, the week for Virtual Console. Like, three really good games from three different publishers on three different platforms. Not a single one of them.
And what did we get? We got Splatterhouse.
Well, this is absolutely rich with irony in the sense that it's so seldom that you get pre-announced dates. Especially press releases ahead of time. You
From NOA, too.
They were so confident, too.
Yeah,
NOA is coming out this day.
It's so seldom. I mean, you know, obviously Hudson always has the dates on its Virtual Console website, and I can't think of a case where that's been wrong before, so that's a first. Then you've got putting a press release ahead of time, which is then contradicted. That's a first. I think Mega Man's like the loosest because there was just hints. There was the suggestion of it, I think, through their community manager kind of guy, Christian Svensson, maybe.
Yeah, but he's a VP.
I know, but
yeah, I think it was Chris Kramer. He's the community manager for Capcom.
Oh, okay.
He made a blog post on their.
Yeah, but I mean, they're pretty well.
It wasn't quite. I don't think it was quite as official in Mega Man's case, but still, even to that extent, it's very rare that we get these kinds of advance indications, and then we get three once, and they're all confounded at once.
He wouldn't have said anything about it unless he had some indication.
Oh yeah,
exactly.
Schedule.
I think it's astonishing.
It just sounds like someone at Nintendo, whoever's managing Virtual Console for Nintendo of America.
It's Ty. That's where he's gone.
Seriously,
he has
no idea what they're doing.
Ty Sugar's new job is the Virtual Console manager at NOA.
I'm wondering if they've just got like a robotic operating buddy managing the database that schedules these things.
The gyroscope's gone off kilter. Somebody put it back in place.
Need more brick stacking games. Need.
We literally got this press release for Samurai Showdown 2 like 3 days ago. Like, I think it came out on Friday.
But what I don't understand is there is a compilation coming out on the Wii. Why would you buy the Virtual Console game?
It already came out.
Yeah, it's already out.
Technically, that's right. The Wii compilation's already out. Technically speaking, James, the Wii version is an emulation of the arcade.
The better version.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you do.
I do.
But yes, the compilation on disc for Wii is they're all the arcade versions.
Right.
Whereas on Virtual Console, you get the home Neo Geo versions. Although the difference is pretty slight.
It's pretty much the Neo Geo was.
There is a technical difference.
Fantastic.
If you're like a really hardcore fan.
It's sound and stuff usually, and there might be some timing stuff.
Yeah.
But still,
the timing in a fighter would be a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, but it might be worked out in some regards.
And if you live in Europe, the disc presumably will not have the PAL issues that Virtual Console releases have, which is...
Oh, almost more, certainly it
which
won't.
Which is... almost all Wii games actually have a 480p mode, whereas, with the Virtual Console, it only runs in one mode, either 480p or the PAL, and most of it is in PAL, and the Neo Geo games are no exception, so that is an issue in fighting games, because it's slower.
Yeah, that would ruin it, to be honest.
All right, well, anyway, I think the interesting thing about this situation is that, you know, as Nintendo fans or as Wii owners, we're getting accustomed to the fact that Virtual Console sucks and we never know what's coming out. And, you know, things are promised and they don't materialize. And you just, you know, you have weeks where it's just shitty horizontal shooters for TG16 or
that's the good old days, Johnny. That's the good old days at this point.
To some extent, yeah. But I mean, you know, we have stuff coming out in other regions that there's no reason it couldn't come out here, and yet it doesn't.
I miss the old the TG16 shooter fests.
Yeah.
I mean, we made fun of them, but we miss you. Come back.
Well, I mean, last week was okay. We had the two import shooters, or that might have been 2 weeks ago.
That was like 2 weeks ago,
but,
I think.
It's nice to get import games, and they have been somewhat consistent. The import games that they're bringing out aren't necessarily the ones we would like them to bring over,
yeah,
but at least they haven't totally given up on that concept. But, I mean, Virtual Console has been pretty terrible for the past 2 or 3 months, and at least. And just as we're getting used to this, we find a week like this where clearly Nintendo has fucked over third-party publishers, three of them.
Three of
in
them.
The same week.
Three important.
So it's not just us who are suffering. It's their licensees who are suffering. And clearly, they don't know what's going on, and I'm starting to wonder if even Nintendo knows what's going on.
Yeah, it really does suggest.
It sounds like they have
all three
one
of these,
person in
I mean,
charge of it who does things willy-nilly.
The fact that all three of these were slated to come out the same week, and instead these other two games came out that looked sound like they were back-burner games, makes me think something happened.
It's very odd. It's very, I mean, it would make more sense if one of them did release, you know? Like, one did and two didn't.
They've never stacked games like that.
But like I said, it's just so rare. I mean, maybe this sort of thing has happened a lot.
It would be one of the best weeks ever of Virtual Console.
But you know, the interesting part for me is that maybe this has happened all the time, but you just don't hear about it. But in this case, that's because normally we're not accustomed to hearing anything in advance. So this kind of crap could be going on left, right, and centre, and you wouldn't know. But you would think that there would be a greater level of surety associated with it when you actually decide to go public.
Guess
and
not.
In fact, apparently not. I mean, it really is quite an amazing lack of coordination.
What if
you have to think these companies wouldn't have said anything unless they were pretty sure?
Yeah, exactly.
And the fact
precisely.
That they did say anything, whereas they used to not announce anything other than Hudson, who seems to have this weird, like special status.
They have like a monthly schedule usually. Like they'll say coming out this month, and then it'd be like you know the 3 or 4 weeks that they'll have something coming out. But, yeah, right. Other than that, so, you normally have no advance indication at all. And it's very odd. I think it sets quite an interesting precedent. Like, remember when Earthbound was rated by the ESRB and everyone thought it was coming? Even if they put a press release out saying Earthbound is coming on Monday, you can't believe it. That's where we are now.
When we ran a story on Earthbound getting rated, I said explicitly, it's not coming.
It probably will eventually, but God knows when, you know. There's just no telling. And honestly, even WiiWare has the same problem where the publishers don't even know specifically when their games are coming out. You've got, again, Strong Bad, another week without the first episode of Strong Bad.
Yeah, it was supposed to be out.
It was supposed to come out in June.
Well,
now it's August. It's still not out. We don't know when it's coming out. We know it's coming out soon.
Yeah.
But they don't know when it's coming out, and they told us that they will inform us as soon as they have a date.
Yeah, but they seem...
they literally don't know when it's coming
out.
Yeah,
they've submitted it, and then
there's supposed to be five episodes of that. Like, you know, how are they going to keep any kind of consistency?
See, I think once they get the first one out, Nintendo would kind of have to sort of kowtow to letting them get them out regularly.
Really?
Why wouldn't they? I mean, they're going to get a cut of it.
I
mean, what else they put in on
there?
What did
something
we get for
like
WiiWare this week?
When you have something
what
this
did
confounding?
We get for WiiWare
hey,
this
James,
week?
Hold on a second.
Wild West guns.
Yeah, Wild West guns.
Yeah.
You're applying logic to this situation.
Yeah,
there is
I mean,
no logic.
There's no logic
yeah,
here.
When you have
there's no place for that here.
No,
yeah,
no
have
there is a logic. It's just a logic that we mere mortals can't understand.
Yeah, I don't think this is... I don't think economic planning has anything to do with
no, it's
the
absence
way
this stuff
is working out. Because as we know, anecdotally, a lot of people have just completely stopped downloading things for Virtual Console because the releases are so shitty.
Yeah, if economics
like
played a role
out
in this,
of good games to put on there for God's
no,
sake.
No, so many. There's
of
so
interesting
many.
Titles.
There's so
if,
many.
If economics played a role in this, that goddamn feed yourself to your stomach explodes game would still be waiting on the shelf.
send
your hate mail to.
Yeah. Well. All right. So. That's our ranting on Virtual Console, and to get back into WiiWare, I'm going to give it back over to Nick once again to guide us through the ocean of upcoming WiiWare stuff that we didn't get to last week.
All that right. May come out one day.
That may.
That might come out
next year.
At some point in the future.
It's exciting.
2010.
Well, I guess I'll kick it off this week with Eternity's Child, which has recently seen release through Steam on PC. Hasn't been favorably reviewed at this point, but it seems like there's a lot of technical issues and a lot of general problems with it that I doubt would pass Nintendo's own technical restriction. No, I think even Strong Bad went back to Telltale for for some sort of technical problem. So I think there's some sort of checks system in place, but I don't really know.
Technical checks.
Yeah, well, yeah, apparently
there's some kind of certification. Right. We don't know. It's a mystery, but there is something.
Yeah. Does the game run?
Well, apparently with Eternity's Child, in some systems it's not, so that's part of the complaint. So I guess there's some serious complaints about just from a technical standpoint what's going on with it, and I guess gameplay-wise there have been some naysayers, but that remains to be seen. And
What kind of game is this?
Well, it's a platformer, and I guess it has some sort of like shooting mechanic associated with it as well. But it's not a shooter per se. It's more of a platforming side scroller.
So it's
game.
Shadow the Hedgehog.
No, yeah. I got from the screenshots. It looked more like Yoshi's Island to me.
Yeah, I get that kind
you,
of.
You kind view. Of aim some kind of projectile on the screen, but it's all 2D and.
Yeah, it's essentially based around a fairy tale from Luc Bernard, and it has this, I guess, unique graphical presentation. Essentially, you are controlling it with the control stick for the platforming, and then you're using the Wii Remote pointer to aim. So I guess that's somewhat similar to the PC version, which is, you know, keyboard for movement and then the mouse for aiming the pointer. So I don't know, it seems pretty interesting, and the graphical presentation of it is pretty unique and seems pretty clean cut. I'll still be hopeful for it regardless of the negative reviews.
I mean, the early feedback is that it might look interesting in static shots, but it doesn't animate very well at all, I think. It's one of the things.
You see, I kind of worried about that when I saw those first static shots, because it seems more like it was like a pop-up book style.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
From what I've heard, it actually suffers a little bit from like that syndrome with the original Rayman title. I don't know if you guys have played that, but essentially Rayman's gigantic on the screen, and I guess the same is for the main character here, where you're almost blindly platforming a lot. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, that's a great feature.
It's almost like even though it's 2D, it's almost like the camera is zoomed in too far. Right. And you don't have any perspective around the character.
And there's no way to back it out.
Rayman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that gets fixed.
Rayman was actually released, was the original Rayman before it became a 3D game in Rayman 2. The original Rayman, I think, was actually ported to Game Boy Advance.
It was a launch game, yes, and it was very pretty.
Yeah. The original game was beautiful, and then Rayman 2 actually was ported to DS. Although I don't think that conversion went very well.
No, it went terrible.
Yeah.
So anyway,
but I guess we're holding out hope that some of at least the technical problems will be worked out before Nintendo allows it to be released on WiiWare.
Right. It seems like even the reviews that were kind of harsh on it said that there was some good concepts there, and really if it spends a little bit of time in testing and gets patched up a little bit, there's some potential there. So I'm hoping that we see that, and with Nintendo's release schedule, it could be freaking year before we see it, so maybe they'll have some time to fix it up.
Yeah, there you go. Optimism.
Optimism.
Get off our show.
Well, who let in the new guy?
Hey, I have to have optimism for the rest of you guys. You've all become jaded after podcasting
for
so long. Oh,
I'm not jaded. Listen to the enthusiasm in that.
God bless you, Nick. God bless you.
Hey, Greg.
I'm optimistic for this next game.
Yes, very much so. World of Goo. I haven't played it, and I know Chiron played it, and he had some really positive things to say about it.
Yeah.
And Windy Man played it too, and loved it.
Yeah. Really enthusiastic.
I don't think it was at E3 at all, unfortunately. That's kind of the sad thing, is because WiiWare is more catering to independent developers. There was almost nothing for WiiWare at E3 except Mega Man 9.
It got blank, didn't it? Big time. But yeah, this was another one of the WiiWare games that Nintendo decided to favour, along with Strong Bad, at the Media Summit back in May, I think it was, and that was where Steven and Chiron got to play, and they certainly had very, very positive things to say.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess for those of you who don't really know what it is, it's a pretty interesting title, where the purpose of the game is where you're building this structure out of different goo balls, and you're trying to pretty much just reach the level's exit. So you're building the structure out, and you know, depending on the different goo balls that you have to use, you'll build out the structure differently. So over the course of each level, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's more of a puzzle-based game than anything else. And it seems like there's probably, per level, an optimal way of solving the puzzle, or maybe even a single way of solving the puzzle. But I believe that this was first shown as kind of like a, I wouldn't say a tech demo, but a concept idea. Mm. I don't know if any of you guys remember that a while back. But I think essentially what wound up happening was it garnered a lot of interest that in independent game circles, and these two guys, I think it's two guys, 2D Boy, decided that they were going to build it out as a WiiWare title. And they have been hard at work and pretty vocal with their fans since they started it. And they are making pretty decent progress, but I guess the only caveat is that in Europe, this won't be a WiiWare title. It's actually going to be a standard retail release.
That's weird.
Yeah, well, it's basically, there's a bankroll, isn't it, that they sold the rights to distribute it as a retail game to a publisher in Europe to raise money to finish the development of a game. And supposedly there will be additional content as a sort of sweetener for what will inevitably be a more expensive package in Europe, although we don't know what that price point is yet. But yeah, I mean, basically the European market will subsidize the game in America as a downloadable release.
Well, yeah. That's what they're good for.
I mean, all our spending on Mario Kart Wii is creating Wii music, so.
That's right. Europe is subsidizing Nintendo's entire strategy.
Because, as you know, Wii Music is taking an awful lot of money to develop.
It's been in development for like 5 years.
You really do need Mario Kart Wii to monopolize like the top three, or you know, with Wii Fit and Mario and Sonic for like 3 months in order to make Wii Music.
You know, Sega published Mario and Sonic.
I assume they're getting fees off that, though. I know they did publish.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. Actually, they paid a licensing fee to Nintendo, but it is Sega's baby, and they are making
obscene amounts of money on it from Europe. That's subsidized.
Oddly enough, yes. Although, you know, from what I've read, it's actually much better than the official Sega Beijing Olympics game that came out this month for Xbox and PS3.
Not good.
Apparently, that's a real pile of crap, and Mario and Sonic is actually like the definitive Olympics game for Beijing.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? I mean, I've heard it's a fun game. I know a couple people who own it.
Yeah.
And as far as like a mini game fest, it's not bad. It's just that there's so many other games like it on Wii that it doesn't necessarily stand out beyond the characters, you know. I have not played it. So
I reviewed the DS game, which is not bad. Although the same developers just made new international track and field for DS as well. You know, the one that uses the Konami characters. So that's pretty much the same thing. If you wanted to try that, although I think I've seen it get some more positive feedback.
Yeah, that's probably the one I would go for if I wanted an Olympic style game on the DS. Because that goes back to the NES game Track and Field.
Yeah, they're trying to pull the same trick with the new branding, like New Super Mario Brothers, but like they're also putting in Konami fan service, like Pyramid Head and Simon Belmont and Sparkster.
Oh, so it's like YY Racers.
It is almost a bit like that, yeah. Like
Konami
the
Crazy
old,
Racers.
Yeah, the old kart racer for the GBA launch.
I love that game. Yeah, I wanted a sequel to that. It's so funny and weird, and I reviewed that actually. It was like a GBA launch game almost, and I found it to be much more interesting than Mario Kart Advanced, Mario Kart Super Circuit. Because it just didn't feel like a rehash, you know. I mean, clearly it's a clone. It's the same kind of game, but the whole aesthetic and the style of it and the music is all just so totally different. It's like Okami almost. It's just a refreshing kind of
change up,
different perspective on essentially the same gameplay. Anyway, it's neither here nor there.
Well, I guess there's not much more to say about World of Goo, but I am looking forward to it personally, and apparently Wendy and Chiron had some favorable things to say about it. So moving on to our next game, Helix, which has made a little bit of a stir recently. There have been some pretty well-done videos floating around the internet about the game, and seeing it in motion and seeing people play it in motion, kind of like the Wii teaser videos from way back in the day. Essentially, you're looking at a rhythm game, and I guess that it's going to be using two Wii remotes where one is being held in each hand, and it's almost like, I believe they described it as DDR for your arms, and
also known as Para-Para Paradise.
Or Space Channel, if anyone's played that.
Space Channel wasn't motion sensitive.
No, right, well, fair enough. But yeah, it's very similar to Space Channel in its concept, where you're watching somebody, or in this case a robot, do certain motions, and then you mimic the robot to the beat. So, I don't know, it seems like people have kind of mixed opinions on the concept itself. I thought it worked pretty well in Space Channel, but there was also kind of like the cheesy story that was kind of funny to go along with the game. So I don't know how this will play out, and I guess the music tracks are kind of independent and not very in-depth, because they're very compressed, I guess, to fit in the small space of WiiWare. So
yeah, 26 music tracks in a WiiWare game sounds like a lot.
Yeah, especially.
But I watched the gameplay preview, and I couldn't really figure out how they were playing it or what you were supposed to do in it, but I was kind of impressed by the fact that it had so much music, and it's all like it's all real music. It's not anybody you've ever heard of, but they're like independent, you know, techno musicians and stuff like that. I thought that was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting take, especially considering that the glut of rhythm games on the market today are really all licensed music. It's pretty much all mainstream stuff, so it's cool to see them work in some independent artists and take a different spin on things. But I don't know, it seems like the gameplay may or may not be for everyone, but if you're a fan of Space Channel, it's probably something worth looking forward to. So, yeah. So anyway, the next title is kind of a big one, and this is Gradius Rebirth, which...
Greg, gird your
loins. This is Greg, all here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, me and John, we're both interested in this, aren't we, John?
Yep.
Me too.
We're
shooter guys, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what they do with it, won't it? I mean, it'd be kind of interesting to see how they handle, like, the, you know, obviously they are going for a sort of look that's very similar to what you might be familiar with Gradius 3 on the Super NES, or just the arcade look that's, like, you know, between Gradius 2 and 3 and 4, I think they all look pretty much the same. So it's this classic Gradius arcade look, but beyond that, we really don't know a whole lot, do we? Don't know who's developing it. We don't know like how original it's going to be. For all we know, it could be like quite a lot of like. I mean, it would be really cheeky if they did, considering a lot of this is available either downloadable form or on the PSP. But it might not be entirely original. I mean, but you'd hope it would be.
It could be made by Treasure.
That would be lovely. I hope so. I mean, they have the experience with Gradius through Gradius 5. WiiWare seems like something that they could. There's a sort of a mid-year.
I thought Gradius 5 was the only one Treasure made.
That is the only one that Treasure made as an entity. I don't know whether, because some of Treasure's members go back to Konami before the formation
of
this. Yeah. So I don't know how many of them ever had experience with Gradius within Konami prior to that.
I think the first one was partially made by people that split off to form Treasure. First Gradius.
So yeah, the one thing I would question is just if it were Treasure behind it, would they have told us that already? You know, they made the point of sort of unveiling it. You might think that'd be an obvious selling point to get people interested in it, because the kind of people that care about Gradius care about who makes it, and you know,
well,
probably have some.
Clearly, they haven't really started pushing this game yet.
No, but it might have
said we don't know much about
it. It was announced for WiiWare with a screenshot. I mean, that is the extent to which it's.
Yeah.
But it will
and
be
it
interesting.
It looks like basically a Super Nintendo.
It will
game,
be
right?
interesting to see how it sort of whether it's sort of like the Mega Man 9 situation, where they're being very, very slavishly sort of similar to the games that it's, you know, sort of echoing, or whether they'll take, because I mean, I read something today actually, Mega Man 9. Apparently they are going to stick to like three enemies on the screen at once or something. There's some of those sort of old restrictions that they would have had, they are sticking to. So they're being very, very faithful.
You wouldn't want to play Mega Man 9 with...
I guess not. No, I mean, obviously, I don't have experience with the franchise. But, you know, that is they're setting... And apparently, this is amazing. You can actually turn on flickering and, like, bugs and stuff. You know, you can make it look like as if it was juddering.
That sounds like something they're doing Retro Game Challenge.
Yep. Well, I suppose, yeah, it's that kind of thing. So they're really going hard with that, whereas... Perhaps with this it'll be a little more progressive, maybe, I don't know, I mean, but it would be nice if it were, but I mean, it'll have to do something, I guess, because there's so many of these kinds of game in the downloadable space that some originality would be nice to make it stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, well, if Treasure's developing it, it will have some new stuff.
Oh,
that's
now,
for sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
So do we
know
for sure?
Working on Wii stuff.
Yeah,
so
we do.
Yeah.
We do know we're working on Wii stuff.
So do we know if this is going to be like NES level, SNES level, or
it's,
what? Because
it's much more on that. It's much more on that Super NES or the arcade, okay. You know, the arcade version of Super NES or Gradius 3 or Gradius 2 or Gradius 4. You know, those three games I think look pretty similar, and it's that kind of, you know, if you've seen, it's not out in America yet, but the Gradius 2 that I downloaded it looks a lot like that. As well as 3.
Gradius 2, though, that was for Famicom, wasn't it?
Oh, no, there's a lot of different Gradius 2s and things. It's quite complicated.
Oh.
This is the Gradius, because
okay.
It's like Life Force and Salamander and all sorts of messy stuff, but the Gradius 2 that I'm on about is the one that was in the arcade, the one that's on the PSP collection, and it was released on Turbo CD, which is where the Virtual Console release comes from.
Oh,
and that is
okay.
Very.
I thought there was a Japanese version.
Yeah,
of
and in
of,
short,
of literally Gradius 2.
And in short, 2 is extremely. This 2 that I'm on about is extremely similar to 3. It's actually quite shockingly similar to 3.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I love Gradius 3. It's slow down hell pretty much on Super Nintendo,
mm-hmm.
But that makes it easier to play. So it never really.
Well,
is it
the good?
I would go in the custom weapon loadout and equip the energy laser and reduce.
Yeah.
So basically,
your
ship
that.
Has this 1 pixel hitbox, and it's making a laser. It's charging up this laser thing that's like 100 times the radius of your ship.
Yeah.
And anything that touches it dies. And then when it charges up long enough, it shoots out into a beam that will kill a boss in like.
And of course,
two
if you have the options,
so you can pretty much dominate.
If
the
you
game.
Have the options,
oh, yeah.
You can create a wall of death, or you can line them up in a row and create one beam of death. That was
right.
A lot. See, Gradius
3 is awesome.
See, that's the draw.
It's like
Gradius
probably one of the
2,
easier.
Yeah,
shooters,
think about Gradius 2. It's pretty much like 3, almost exactly. A lot of the levels are pretty similar, but it doesn't slow down as much because I guess the Turbo CD was just a better platform for that. And then the other thing is you don't have that weapon customization, which is a shame.
Oh,
it takes some. It's more pure.
Bad.
More down the line. So again, that will be interesting to see with Rebirth, whether they sort of stick like really rigidly to the old school or whether they go more down the route of the customization.
You can customize in Gradius 5.
Yeah.
So I hope they'll stick with that regardless of the developer. I hope they won't go backwards with that because I find the customization to be really fun. Yeah. All right. Sorry. But we're all excited about Gradius Rebirth.
Yeah,
yes.
Konami have hinted at that they'd like to do more franchises, haven't they? They'd like to do this with more franchises beyond Gradius. So
they could start remaking all the Castlevania Symphony of the Night for the handhelds.
Yeah. one thing I would say.
Everybody should be laughing right now.
They've been holding.
I mean, it was a joke.
They've been holding.
Definitely.
It's not that implausible. But they have been holding for some reason of the NES Castlevania games. Castlevania 3 hasn't showed up. So you wonder whether they're going to do something with that. Like, you know, maybe at some point, maybe like a remake of some kind or something. it's kind of interesting.
It is the most popular, the most beloved of the traditional Castlevanias before they went RPG. So, mm-hmm. that would be cool. I don't know, maybe you could argue that Castlevania 4 is more beloved, I guess.
Or even Rondo, even, because that sold score as well. It's kind of like...
Yeah, Rondo's really obscure, though. I mean, yeah. Castlevania 3 was like a big hit. A lot of people played it, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry.
I think it's interesting that that these companies are kind of moving in this direction with WiiWare, where they're remake, or not remaking, but they're re-envisioning old series kind of how they were back, you know, when they originally released. And I'd really like to see WiiWare kind of become a venue for more of those games from everybody. There's so many, you know, classic titles that you don't see 2D games anymore like that. And it's really refreshing to see, you know, Mega Man 9, to see Greatest Rebirth. You know, I'd like to see more of that. So,
well,
hopefully.
I mean, the whole thing is, I think that there's definitely an audience out there because, I mean, you have kind of, it kind of puts a professional spin on that whole homebrew thing where people will actually take the old ROMs and switch stuff around and then put out their own versions of it.
Right.
I mean, go to YouTube. You can spend hours watching the Super Mario 3 levels that people made.
Yeah, and I mean, this is pretty much exactly what those people want or are trying to emulate. So I think it's really cool as well.
All right. Well, I guess we'll move on to a more traditional, well, not traditional if you want to call it that, but a sequel to an already released WiiWare title, which would be Lost Winds. And right after Lost Winds 1 released, and I think kind of in the flurry of complaints about how short it was, the developer kind of came out and said, well, hey, look, we're working on Lost Winds 2, and it's going to continue up the story from the first one. So,
and in the time it took to read that press release, you could have actually beaten the first game.
I played it for about 45 minutes at Wendy's house before E3 started, and I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't buy it because I'm pretty sure I played through most of it.
Yeah, you were about 15 minutes from the end.
Yeah, I've heard 3 hours.
No, it's like
long.
One.
Is it really shorter
hours?
Than that?
About 2 hours. It's
a short game.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it enough to go spend $10 to play the rest of it.
Yeah,
because when it first came out, members of our forums were saying, I beat it in an hour and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was their first playthrough, and that's ridiculous. That is not worth
it. It's a neat idea. I kind of prefer the way it was done on the DS with Kirby's Canvas Curse. But
right, yeah, that's where it was really well
done. For it on Wii.
But that was really well done. I mean, Kirby's Canvas is excellent. Mm-hmm. So
I understand the idea that a game doesn't have to be really long as it's good. But there's a limit. There's a limit to that, and an hour and a half to 3 hours is before that limit even begins to be considered.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the reason that people don't complain about this with, say, Portal, you don't hear that many complaints about how short Portal is. And that's because the way it's designed, the way the aesthetic and the story are built into it, it feels like you complete the arc. It feels like when you get to the end of Portal, even though you can easily beat it 3 or 4 hours the first time you ever play through it, it feels like you have finished it. It feels like you got to the end of a complete experience. And I think the reason, what I got out of reading Steven's review of Lost Winds and from hearing from reading forum posts also, is people felt like it just kind of abruptly ended.
Yeah.
Unexpectedly.
Yeah, you know what I'd call it like?
That is a good way to piss people off.
It was actually like a lot like demos on Xbox Live is actually what it felt like. It felt like you downloaded a demo and you had this really cool idea and you were playing with it. And then, you know, after you played for an hour, the game just, like, popped up a message and said, hey, you can buy this come September when it comes out on, you know, the Wii system.
Yeah.
Just like, it felt exactly like that to me. And I liked it. I thought it was really fun. But it just, you play one boss and then game over, you win. And that was disappointing, to say the least. So.
It all comes down to the subtle art of, you know, communicating the experience to the user.
Managing,
you know,
expectations,
not necessarily that
isn't
they,
it?
You know, yeah, that's part of it too, but also just leaving you with some kind of sense of satisfaction to tide you over until the next part comes out. You know, you can't just leave people hanging like that after such a short experience. So
The thing is too, it's like if you're going to charge me $10 for something, you better make sure it's longer than a movie that I would see in the theater. You know? Like, yeah. my total playtime is like an hour. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think people still recognize that it was a good idea, and not the, you know, shortness of it, but the concept of the game was a good idea, and it was intriguing. And I think, or at least I'm hoping, that most people are saying, hey, look, Lost Winds was good, but you're not going to trick us again, so give us something that's worth our time.
I guess the interesting thing with regard to 2 is, to what extent can they actually make it longer with the constraints of the WiiWare platform? I mean, you know, is it really
a
case of...
Look, that game did not push the size limits.
How many blocks was it?
I don't know, but it wasn't as many as... It wasn't as many as Kokoto...
Yeah, which I think it was something like that. Was two. Lost Winds was in the sort of 250, and you
Kokoto Fishing Master was the biggest game when it came out.
You could go like to 300 or something, but still, it may well be able to go somewhat bigger, but it does raise this you know, because the graphics are relatively quite complicated, and for a WiiWare game, it does raise. I mean, how much longer they can make
it? You just have to be creative in how you use them, really.
It would be really cool if they could make. If Lost Winds 1 was a prerequisite for Lost Winds 2,
right,
and they could basically reuse the engine code that you already downloaded
sort of piggyback
and make the second
onto
one
it.
Purely new content. I think the reason that they could never do that is that most people aren't going to have room in their internal memory to have both downloaded.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. Right. It does put those kinds of restrictions on it. I mean, and that's the other issue, isn't it? Is that hypothetically, even if they could make a really big game, would they want to? Because people are going to say, how much stuff do I have to sacrifice to get this? I mean, it's the continuing problem of the absence of a storage solution.
Well, it could be that they come up with a better method of compression.
Sure, yeah, I mean, these kind of technical things.
So, there are a number of things. They'll probably need, I don't know, less text, not that text is probably a significant factor, but less text explaining how the game is played and stuff
And they could reuse, some of the background assets and stuff so that they're not...
Yeah, exactly.
There's ways that they could extend the length and... still stay within their size restriction, I think. But, I don't really know what's going on their end. So, but I guess we'll see. So we're going to close it up on, I guess, somewhat of a sleeper hit title, but the title is Shantae. And I know that sounds terrible already, but... apparently...
Shanae-nae!
Yeah.
I wish I could remember some quotes from Shanae-nae, because, God, it would be so funny to bust them out. But it's been, the character from Martin.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where he put on a wig.
God, that was girl.
I love that show. Yeah. I think my favorite character he played was that cop, that old policeman.
Like, yeah.
Anyway. Sorry.
That one was for
me
and Johnny.
Remember when Martin Lawrence was funny?
Yeah, exactly.
15 years ago?
Yep, we didn't make terrible shows.
Oh, God. You old men.
Yeah, I know.
Can we get back to the game?
Anyway, back to the game. The original title is actually on the Game Boy Color, and I believe it was released after the Game Boy Advance had already come out, or after the Game Boy Advance had already become obvious to... be succeeding the Game Boy Color, so it was kind of released at an odd time for the title, so not a lot of people had a chance to play it, but apparently it was a pretty competent 2D platformer that a lot of people have a big affinity for. It on one hand kind of reminds me of Knights, where it's one of those games where practically no one's played it, but the people who have nothing but great things to say about it, so maybe that will fuel this to come to WiiWare. There's been a lot of talk about releasing it on a variety of systems. I guess since then it was rumored for a GameCube release and then general Wii release, and it's been talked about as being a 2D platformer, a 3D platformer, but I guess more recently VoldyWay of WayForward said that they are planning it for WiiWare, and I don't know. There hasn't been much more said about it than that. I know that one of the original developers on the game was what is it, Mark Bozon or Matt Bozon?
Mark Bozon is the guy, his brother who works at IGN.
Right. So the brother
and
of the guy
who actually, Mark Bozon used to work at WayForward too. He did some level design for one of their games. I don't know. He did some minor work.
Yeah, he came back on for the challenge mode of Contra 4. You know, the little mission thingies.
Oh, that's
apparently
right. Yeah,
he did some work on
that on their podcast. But yeah, Matt Bozon is a game designer at WayForward, and he was involved with some of that. I mean, WayForward is a talented studio. They haven't, you know, they made some crap like Ping Pals. But they've also made some really good stuff like Contra 4. And then they've made some weird stuff in the middle like Sigma Star's story for GBA, which is a big missed opportunity. Like, it could have been really cool. But, I mean, I've always heard good things about Shantae. I've never played it. But, you know, they actually have another WiiWare game coming out that is like this horror survival puzzle game.
Yeah, it was Lit.
I forget what it's called, but it's about
It's called Lit.
That's
right.
Yeah, it's based on Light and Shadow. And no one's seen it. I mean, these things presumably are pretty early, so we don't know when we're going to see more of these. But they're working on at least those two WiiWare games.
And that pretty much wraps up the list I had. I don't know about you guys. I kind of hit on some of the major ones that I was interested in. Now, is there anything that I missed that you guys have been looking forward to?
Well, there was a couple of things that came out this week about ones we talked about last week. I think apparently, like, was it Space Invaders and Alien Crush are coming to Japan this month, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I think Space Invaders is going to be like 500 points. Really, really fun. But it's going to have DLC. But it's going to have DLC and stuff, so I don't know whether you're going to be kind of getting stiffed on the bit, and then they'll heavily encourage you to get sort of add-on packs, and it's going to be a kind of similar thing with Alien Crush 2. I think that's starting at a higher price point, but it's also going to have add-on stuff. So, but August in Japan, God knows when it's coming to the rest of us, as we've talked about earlier.
And will it have a paddle controller? That's my question. Because if it doesn't, I'm not going to mess with it. I'm sorry.
They should have support for the DS paddle controller. Just let you use your DS
connectivity.
As
Certainly, actually, would be awesome. That's a brilliant idea.
Well, it's totally feasible. Yep. You know, it's just a matter of if they actually decide to do it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just in a totally off topic. But I'm really shocked that more companies haven't tried using the DS as a controller for Wii games, or at least as an additional interface, because it would seem to be fairly simple to do. It's been, I mean, at most been used so far as like a Pokemon thing, which is really sad. But there's so much more you could do with it, as we saw in GameCube, you know, and now that the infrastructure is easier, I think it's sad that more people aren't trying it. I think it's sad that there aren't any good online games for DS. Like John, you mentioned in your blog that Moon could be the first online first-person shooter for DS since Metroid Prime Hunters, which came out in 2005.
It was early 2006, but yeah, I mean, pretty much the same.
I've heard that
Moon's going to be more single-player focused, though.
I think it's more of an adventure-style game, maybe, than a shooter. Yeah.
It might actually be more like Metroid than Metroid Prime Hunters.
That wouldn't be very hard.
No.
All right. Yeah. That, again, off topic. But I'm sorry. My mind is all over the place tonight. So that's our last game. Yeah, I know. Well. That's our last game in the WiiWare Roundup, and I want to thank Nick again for putting all this together and guiding us through it.
No problem.
And that marks the end of this long episode once again. So thanks to Nick, Greg, James, John. I've been your host, Jonathan, and we will see you next week, or we'll talk to you next week. Later.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Later. I'm gonna go get a Coke. I'll be right back, guys.
He actually means cocaine. John does it up Miami style.